her gold-tipped braids tinkling. In the early morning sun, her hazelnut skin was smooth and lovely. Honestly, it was a tad unfair that Nehemia naturally looked so beautiful, especially at the crack of dawn. Nehemia went on, "I think such honor faded from Otterland generations ago. But before Terrasen fell, its royal court was the one that set the example. My father used to tell me stories of Terrasen's court, of the warriors and lords who served King Orlan in his inner circle, of the unrivaled power and bravery and loyalty of his court. That was why the King of Otterland targeted Terrasen first, because it was the strongest, and because if Terrasen had been given the chance to raise an army against him, Otterland would have been annihilated. My father still says that if Terrasen were to rise again, it might stand a chance. It would be a genuine threat to Otterlin." Selena looked toward the hearth.
"I know," she managed to get out.
Nehemia turned to look at her.
"Do you think another court like that could ever rise again?
Not just in Terrasen, but anywhere. I've heard the court in Wendland still follows the old ways, but they're across the ocean and do us no good. They looked in the other direction while the king enslaved our lands, and they still refuse all calls for aid." Selena forced herself to snort, to wave her hand in dismissal. "This is an awfully heavy discussion for breakfast." She filled her mouth with toast. When she dared a glance at the princess, Nehemia's expression remained contemplative.
"Any news about the king?"
Nehemia clicked her tongue.
"Only that he's added that little grub Roland to his council.
And Roland seems to have been given the task of handling me. Apparently I've been too pushy with Minister Mullison, the councilman responsible for dealing with Calacalla's labor camp. Roland is supposed to placate me. I can't tell who I feel worse for, you or Roland."
Nehemia jabbed her in the side, and Selena chuckled, batting her hand away.
Fleetfoot used their temporary distraction to swipe a piece of bacon right off the platter, and Selena squawked, "You brazen thief!" But Fleetfoot leapt off the bed, scuttled to the hearth, and stared right at Selena as she gobbled down the rest of the bacon. Nehemia laughed, and Selena found herself joining in before she tossed Fleetfoot another piece of bacon.
"Let's just stay in bed all day," Selena said, throwing herself back onto the pillows and nestling into the blankets. "I certainly wish I could," Nehemia said, sighing loudly. "Alas, I have things to do."
And so did she, Selena realized, like preparing for her dinner that evening with Archer. Chapter 10. Dorian shivered as he entered the kennels that afternoon, brushing snow from his red cloak. Beside him, Kaol puffed air into his cupped hands, and the two young men hurried farther inside, the straw-coated floors crunching underfoot. Dorian hated winter, the intolerable cold and the way his boots never seemed completely dry. They had chosen to enter the castle through the kennels because it was the easiest way to avoid Holland, Dorian's 10-year-old brother, who had returned from school that morning and was already shrieking demands at anyone unfortunate enough to cross his path. Holland would never look for them here. He hated animals. They strode through the chorus of barking and whining, Dorian pausing every now and then to greet a favorite hound. He could have spent the rest of the day here, if only to avoid the court dinner in honor of Holland.
"I can't believe my mother pulled him out of school," he muttered.
"She missed her son,"
Kaol said, still rubbing his hands together, though the kennels were deliciously warm compared to outside.
"And now that there's this movement growing against your father, he wants Holland where he can keep an eye on him until it gets sorted out."
"Until Selena kills all the traitors," was what Kaol didn't need to say. Dorian sighed.
"I don't even want to imagine what sort of absurd gift my mother bought him. Do you remember the last one?"
Kaol grinned. It was hard not to remember the last gift Georgina had bought her younger son. 4 white ponies with a tiny golden carriage for Holland to drive about himself. He'd trampled half of the queen's favorite garden. Kaol led them toward the doors at the far end of the kennels.
"You can't avoid him forever."
Even as the captain spoke, Dorian could see him scanning, as he always did, for any sign of danger, any threat. After so many years, Dorian was used to it, but it still rankled his pride a little. They passed through the glass doors and into the castle. To Dorian, the hall was warm and glowing,
wreaths and garlands of evergreen still decorated archways and tabletops. To Kaol, he supposed, an enemy could be waiting anywhere.
Maybe he's changed in the past few months. Matured a little, Kaol said.
You said that last summer, and I almost punched his teeth out.
Kaol shook his head. Thank the word, my brother was always too afraid of me to talk back.
Dorian tried not to look surprised. Since Kaol had abdicated his title of heir as Aniel, he hadn't seen his family in years, and rarely spoke about them. Dorian could have gleefully killed Kaol's father for disowning him, refusing even to see Kaol when he brought his family to Rifthold for an important meeting with the king. Even though Kaol had never said it, Dorian knew the scars went deep. Dorian sighed loudly.
Remind me again why I'm going to this dinner tonight.
Because your father will kill you and me if you don't show up and formally greet your brother.
Maybe he'd hire Selena to do it.
She has dinner plans tonight. With Archer Finn.
Isn't she supposed to kill him?
She wants information, apparently.
A heavy pause.
I don't like him.
Dorian stiffened. They had managed, at least for the afternoon, to not talk about her. And for those few hours, it had been like nothing had ever changed between them. But things had changed.
I don't think you need to worry about Archer stealing her away, especially if he's going to be dead by the end of the month.
It came out sharper and colder than he intended. Kaol cut a glance at him.
You think that's what I'm worried about?
Yes, and it's obvious to everyone except the two of you. But he didn't want to have this conversation with Kaol, and Kaol sure as hell didn't want to have this conversation with him, so Dorian just shrugged.
She'll be fine, and you'll laugh at yourself for worrying. Even if he's as well guarded as she claims, she's the champion for a reason, right?
Kaol nodded, though Dorian could still see the worry in his eyes. Selena knew that the scarlet dress was a little scandalous. And she knew that it was definitely not appropriate for winter, given how low the front dipped and how much lower the back went. Low enough to reveal through the black lace mesh that she wasn't wearing a corset beneath it. But Archer Finn had always liked women who were daring with their clothes, who were ahead of the trend, and this dress, with its close-fitting bodice, long, tight sleeves, and gently flowing skirt, was about as new and different as it came. Which was why, when she ran into Kaol on her way out of her rooms, she wasn't very surprised when he stopped dead and blinked, then blinked again. Selena smiled at him.
Hello to you, too.
Kaol stood in the hallway, his bronze eyes traveling down the front of her dress, then up again.
You're not wearing that.
She snorted and walked past him, deliberately giving him a view of the far more provocative back.
Oh, yes, I am.
Kaol fell into step beside her as she made her way down to the front gate and the waiting carriage.
You're going to catch your death.
She slung her ermine cloak around her.
Not with this, I won't.
Do you even have any weapons with you?
She stomped down the main staircase that led to the entrance hall.
Yes, Kaol, I have weapons. And I'm wearing this dress because I want Archer to ask the same thing, to think I don't have any on me.
There were indeed knives strapped to her legs, and the pins sweeping her hair into a curling cascade down one shoulder were long and razor sharp. Commissioned, to her delight, by Philippa, so she didn't need to
go traipsing around with cold metal jammed between your breasts.
Oh, was all Kaol said.
They reached the main entrance in silence, and Selena slipped on her kid gloves as they neared the towering double doors that opened onto the courtyard. She was just about to walk down the front steps when Kaol touched her shoulder.
Be careful, he said,
examining the carriage, the driver, the footman. They seemed to pass inspection.
Don't put yourself at risk.
I do this for a living, you know.
She never should have told him about her capture, never should have let him see her as vulnerable, because now he'd just worry about her and doubt her and irritate her to no end. She didn't know why she did it, but she shook off his touch and hissed,
I'll see you tomorrow.
He stiffened as if he'd been struck, his teeth flashing.
What do you mean, tomorrow?
Again, that stupid, bright anger took over, and she gave him a slow smile.
You're a smart boy, she said, stalking down the steps to the carriage.
Figure it out yourself. Kaol kept staring as though he didn't know her, his body so very still. She wouldn't have him thinking her vulnerable or foolish or inexperienced. Not when she'd worked so hard and sacrificed so much to get to this point. Maybe it had been a mistake to let him in. Because the idea of him thinking that she was weak, that she needed to be protected, made her want to shatter someone's bones. "Good night," she said, and before she could reconsider all that she'd just implied, she got into the carriage and drove away. She'd worry about Kaol later. Tonight, her focus was on Archer and on getting the truth out of him. Archer was waiting inside an exclusive dining room, frequented by the elite of Rifthold. Most of the tables were already occupied, the patrons' fine clothes and jewels glimmering in the dim light. As the servant at the front helped her out of her cloak, she made sure that she was angled away from Archer so he could get an eyeful of the exquisite black lace that covered the open back and mostly concealed her scars from Endovier. She felt the eyes of the servant on her, too, but pretended not to notice. Archer let out a breath, and she turned to find him grinning, slowly shaking his head. "I think stunning, beautiful, and dazzling are the words you're looking for," she said. She took his arm as they were escorted to a table tucked into an alcove of the ornate room. Archer ran a finger along the red velvet sleeve of her gown. "I'm glad to see your taste matured along with the rest of you. And with your arrogance, it seems." She would have smiled anyway, she told herself. Once they were seated, had the menu recited to them, and ordered the wine, Selena found herself staring into that exquisite face. "So," she said, leaning back in her seat, "how many ladies want to kill me tonight for monopolizing your time?" He gave a laugh like a tickle of breath.
"If I told you, you'd be bolting back to the castle."
"You're still that popular?" Archer waved a hand, taking a sip from his wine.
"I still have my debts to Clarice," he said, naming the most influential and prosperous madam in the capital. "But, yes."
A twinkle gleamed in his eye.
"And what of your surly friend? Should I watch my back tonight, too?"
This was all a dance, a prelude to what would come later. She winked at him. "He knows better than to try to keep me locked up."
"Word help the man who does. I still remember what a hellion you were."
"And here I was, thinking you found me charming."
"In the way a mountain cat's cub is charming, I suppose."
She laughed and drank a small sip of her wine. She had to keep her head as clear as possible. When she set her glass on the table, she found Archer giving her that contemplative, sad look he'd given her yesterday.
"Can I ask how you came to work for him?"
She knew he meant the king, and also knew he was aware they weren't the only people in the dining room. He would have made a good assassin. Perhaps the king's suspicions weren't so far-fetched. But she'd prepared for this question, and countless others, so she gave him a wicked smile and said, "Turns out my skills are better suited to aiding the Empire than they are to mining. Working for him and working for Aerobin are nearly the same." That wasn't a lie, actually. Archer gave a slow, considering nod.
"Our professions have always been similar, yours and mine. I can't tell which is worse, training us for the bedroom or the battlefield."
If she recalled correctly, he'd been 12 when Clarice had discovered him as an orphan running wild in the capital streets and invited him to train with her. And when he turned 17 and had the bidding party for his virginity, there had been rumors of actual brawls breaking out among would-be patronesses. "I can't tell either. They're equally horrible, I suppose." She lifted her wine glass in a toast. "To our esteemed owners." His eyes lingered on her for a moment before he lifted his glass and murmured, "To us." The sound of his voice was enough to make her skin heat, but the look in his eyes as he said it, the curve of that divine mouth. He was a weapon, too. A beautiful, deadly weapon. He leaned over the edge of the table, pinning her to the spot with his stare. A challenge, and an intimate invitation.
"Gods above and words save me."
She actually needed to take a long sip from her wine this time. "It's going to take more than a few sultry glances to make me your willing slave, Archer. You should know better than to try the tricks of your trade on me." He let out a low, rumbling laugh that she felt in her core.
"And I think you know well enough to realize what I'm not actually using them. If I were,
then we would have left the restaurant already.
That's a bold, bold claim. I don't think you'd want to go head-to-head with me when it comes to tricks of the trade.
Oh, I want to do a lot of things with you.
She'd never been so grateful to see a servant in her life, and never realized that a bowl of soup could be so immensely interesting. Since she dismissed her carriage just to spite Kaol and back up her insinuation, Selena wound up in Archer's carriage after dinner. The meal itself had been pleasant enough. Talk of old acquaintances, the theater, books, the miserable weather. All comfortable, safe topics, though he'd kept looking at her like she was his prey, and this was one long hunt. They sat beside each other on the bench of the carriage, close enough that she could smell whatever fine cologne he wore, an elegant, tantalizing blend that made her think of silk sheets and candlelight. So she turned her mind to what she was about to do. The carriage rolled to a stop, and Selena glanced out the small window to see a familiar, beautiful townhouse. Archer looked at her and gently twined her fingers with his before raising her hand to his lips. It was a soft, slow kiss that burned through her. He murmured onto her skin, "Do you want to come inside?" She swallowed hard. "Don't you want a night off?" This was not what she'd expected, and this was not what she wanted, flirting aside. He lifted his head, but still held her hand, his thumb caressing small circles into her flame-hot skin. "It's immensely different when it's my choice, you know." Someone else might have missed it, but she'd also grown up without choices and recognized the glimmer of bitterness. She eased her hand out of his. "Do you hate your life?" Her words were barely more than a whisper. He looked at her, truly looked at her, as though he somehow hadn't seen her until just now. "Sometimes," he said, and then his eyes shifted to the window behind her and the townhouse beyond it. "But someday," he went on, "someday I'll have enough money to pay off Clarice forever, to really be free and live on my own."
"You'd leave behind being a courtesan?"
He gave her a half-smile that was more real than any expression she'd seen him give tonight.
"By that point, I'll either be rich enough that I won't ever have to work, or old enough that no one will want to hire me."
She had a flicker of memory from a time when, just for a moment, she'd been free, when the world had been wide open, and she'd been about to enter it with Sam at her side. It was a freedom that she was still working for, because even though she'd tasted it only for a heartbeat, it had been the most exquisite heartbeat she'd ever experienced. She took a steadying breath and looked him in the eye. It was time. "The king sent me to kill you."
Chapter 11.
His training with the assassins must have paid off, because Archer was across the carriage and brandishing a hidden dagger between them before she could blink.
"Please," he breathed,
his chest rising and falling in uneven patterns.
"Please, Lena."
She opened her mouth, ready to explain everything, but he was gasping down breaths, his eyes wide.
"I can pay you."
A small, wretched part of her was fairly smug at the sight of him cowering. But she held up her hands, showing him she was unarmed, at least as far as he could see. "The king thinks you're a part of a rebel movement that's interrupting his agenda." A harsh, barked laugh, so raw that none of the smooth, lovely man was even recognizable in the sound.
"I'm not part of any movement. Or damn me, I might be a whore, but I'm not a traitor."
She kept her hands where he could see them, and opened her mouth to tell him to shut up, sit down, and listen. But he went on.
"I don't know anything about a movement like that. I haven't even heard of anyone who'd dare to try to get in the way of the king, but...
His panting evened out.
"If you spare me, I can feed you information about a group that I know is starting to gather power in Rifthold."
"The king is targeting the wrong people?"
"I don't know," he said quickly. "But this group, this one, he'd probably want to know more about. It seems like they recently learned that the king might be planning some new horror for us all, and they want to try to stop him."
If she were a nice, decent person, she'd tell him to take the time to calm himself, to right his mind. But she wasn't a nice, decent person, and his panic was giving his tongue free rein, so she let him go on.
"I've only heard my clients whispering about it every now and then, but there's a group that's formed, right here in Rifthold. and they want to put Aelin Galathinius back on Terrasen's throne.
Her heart stopped beating. Aelin Galathinius, the lost heir of Terrasen.
Aelin Galathinius is dead, she breathed.
Archer shook his head. They don't think so. They say she's alive, and that she's raising an army against the king. She's looking to reestablish her court, to find what's left of King Orlan's inner circle. She just stared at him, willing her fingers to unclench, willing air into her lungs. If it were true... No, it wasn't true. If these people actually claimed to have met the heir to the throne, then she had to be an imposter. Was it mere coincidence that Nehemia had mentioned Terrasen's court that morning? That Terrasen was the one force capable of standing against the king, if it could get to its feet again, with or without the true heir. But Nehemia had sworn to never lie to her. If she'd known anything, she would have said it. Selena closed her eyes, though she was aware of Archer's every movement. In the darkness, she pulled herself together, shoved down that desperate, foolish hope until nothing but an ageless fear blanketed it again. She opened her eyes. Archer was gaping at her, his face white as death. "I have no intention of killing you, Archer," she said. He sagged against the bench, releasing his grip on the dagger. "I'm going to give you a choice. You can fake your own death right now and flee the city before dawn. Or I can give you until the end of the month. 4 weeks. 4 weeks to discreetly get your affairs in order. I assume you have money tied up in Rifthold. But the time comes at a cost. I'll keep you alive only if you can get me information about whatever this Terrasen rebel movement is, and whatever they know about the king's plans. At the end of the month, you will fake your death, and you will leave this city, go someplace far away, and never use the name Archer Finn again. He stared carefully, warily at her. I'll need the rest of the month to untangle my money. He loosed a breath, then rubbed his face with his hands. After a long moment, he said, Perhaps this is a blessing in disguise. I'll get to be free of Clarice and start my life anew elsewhere.
Though he gave her a wobbly smile, his eyes were still haunted. Why did the king even suspect me?
She hated herself for feeling such pity for him.
I don't know. He just handed me a piece of paper with your name on it and said you were part of some movement to upset his plans, whatever those may be.
Archer snorted. I only wish I could be that sort of man.
She studied him. The strong jaw, the broad frame, all suggested strength. But what she'd seen just now, that was not strength.
Kaol had known right away what sort of man Archer was. Kaol had seen through the illusion of strength, and she hadn't. Shame heated her cheeks, but she made herself speak again.
You truly think you can uncover information about this movement from Terrasen?
Even though the heir had to be an imposter, the movement itself was worth looking into. Elena had said to look for clues. She might find some here.
Archer nodded. There's a ball tomorrow night at a client's house. I've heard him and his friends murmuring about the movement.
If I sneak you into the party, it might give you a chance to look around his office. Maybe you'll even find real traitors at the party, not just suspects. And some ideas about what the king might be up to. Oh, this information could be very useful.
Send along the details to the castle tomorrow morning, care of Lillian Gordana, she told him. But if this party turns out to be a load of nonsense, I'll reconsider my offer. Don't make me look the fool, Archer.
You're Aerobin's protege,
he said quietly, opening the carriage door and keeping his distance as best he could while he exited.
I wouldn't dare.
Good, she said. And Archer? He paused, a hand on the carriage door. She leaned forward, letting a bit of that wicked darkness shine through her eyes. If I find out that you aren't being discreet, if you draw too much attention to yourself or attempt to flee, I will end you. Is that clear?
He gave her a low bow.
I am your eternal servant, m'lady. And then he gave her a smile that made her wonder whether she'd regret her decision to let him live.
Leaning into the carriage bench, she thumped on the ceiling, and the driver headed to the castle. Though she was exhausted, she had one last thing to do before bed. She knocked once, then opened the door to Kael's bedroom just wide enough to peer in. He was standing frozen before the fireplace, as if he'd been in the middle of pacing. "I thought you'd be asleep," she said, slipping inside. "It's past 12. He folded his arms across his chest, his captain's uniform rumpled and unbuttoned at the collar. "Then why bother stopping by? I thought you weren't coming home tonight anyway." She pulled her cloak tighter around her, her fingers digging into the soft fur. She lifted her chin. "Turns out Archer wasn't as dashing as I remembered. Funny how a year in Endovir can change the way you see people." His lips tugged upward, but his face remained solemn.
"Did you get the information you wanted?"
"Yes, and then some," she said. She explained what Archer had told her, pretending that he'd accidentally given her the information, of course. She explained the rumors surrounding the lost heir of Terrasen, but left out the bits about Aelin Galathinius seeking to reestablish her court and raise an army. And about Archer not really being in the movement. Oh, and about wanting to uncover the king's true plans. When she finished telling Kael about the upcoming ball, he walked up to the mantle and braced his hands against it, staring at the tapestry hanging on the wall above. Though it was faded and worn, she instantly recognized the ancient city nestled into the side of a mountain above a silver lake. Aniel, Kael's home.
"When are you going to tell the king?"
he asked, turning his head to look at her. "Not until I know if this is actually real, or until I use Archer to get as much information as I can before I kill him." He nodded, pushing off the mantle.
"Just be careful."
"You keep saying that."
"Is there something wrong with saying it?"
"Yes, there is. I'm not some silly fool who can't protect herself or use her head."
"Did I ever imply that?"
"No, but you keep saying be careful and telling me how you worry and insisting you help me with things and..."
"Because I do worry."
"Well, you shouldn't. I'm just as capable of looking after myself as you are." He took a step toward her, but she held her ground.
"Believe me, Selena,"
he snarled, his eyes flashing.
"I know you can look after yourself. But I worry because I care. Gods help me, I know I shouldn't, but I do. So I always tell you to be careful, because I will always care what happens."
She blinked. "Oh," was all she managed. He pinched the bridge of his nose and squeezed his eyes shut, then took a long, deep breath. Selena gave him a sheepish smile. Chapter 12. The mask was held in a riverfront estate along the Avery, and was so packed that Selena had no trouble slipping in with Archer. Philippa had managed to find her a delicate white gown, made up of layers of chiffon and silk patterned like overlapping feathers. A matching mask obscured the upper half of her face, and ivory feathers and pearls had been woven into her hair. It was fortunate it was a masquerade and not a normal party, since she certainly recognized a few faces in the crowd. They were mostly other courtesans she'd once known, along with Madame Clarisse. During the carriage ride here, Archer had promised that Arobin Hommel wasn't attending, and neither was Lysandra, a courtesan with whom Selena had a long, violent history, and someone she was fairly certain she'd kill if she ever saw again. As it was, just seeing Clarisse floating through the party, arranging liaisons between her courtesans and the guests, was enough to set Selena on edge. While she had come as a swan, Archer had dressed as a wolf, his tunic pewter, his slender pants dove gray, and his boots shining black. His wolf mask covered all but his sensual lips, which were currently parted in a rather wolfish smile as he squeezed the hand she had on his arm.
"Not the grandest party we've ever been to," he said, "but Davis has the best pastry chef in Rifthold."
Indeed, throughout the room, tables were overflowing with the most beautiful, decadent-looking pastries she'd ever seen. Pastry stuffed with cream, cookies dusted with sugar, and chocolate, chocolate, chocolate beckoning to her everywhere. Perhaps she'd swipe a few before she left. It was an effort to return her gaze to Archer.
How long has he been your client?
That wolfish smile flickered. A few years now, which is how I noticed the change in his behavior. His voice dropped to a whisper, the words tickling her ear as he leaned in. He's more paranoid, eats less, and holds up in his office any chance he gets.
At the other end of the domed ballroom, massive windows faced a patio overlooking a glittering stretch of the Avery. She could imagine those doors thrown wide in the summer, and how lovely it would be to dance alongside the riverbank under the stars and city lights.
I have about 5 minutes before I need to make my rounds, Archer said, his eyes following Clarice as she patrolled the room. She'll expect an auction for me on a night like this.
Selena's stomach turned over, and she found herself reaching for his hand. But he just gave her a bemused smile.
Just a few more weeks, right?
There was still enough bitterness that she squeezed his fingers reassuringly.
Right, she swore.
Archer jerked his chin toward a stocky, middle-aged man holding court with a group of well-dressed people.
That's Davis, he said under his breath. I haven't seen much during my visits, but I think he might be a key leader in this group.
You're assuming that based on glimpsing some papers in the house?
Archer slid his hands into his pockets. One night, about 2 months ago, I was here when three of his friends came over. All of them clients of mine, too. It was urgent, they said. And when Davis slipped out of the bedroom...
She gave him a half-smile. You somehow accidentally overheard everything? Archer smiled back, but it faded as he again looked at Davis, who was pouring wine for the people assembled around him, including some young women who looked a year or two shy of 16. Selena's own smile vanished as well. This was a side of Rifthold that she hadn't missed in the least.
They spent more time ranting about the king than making plans, and regardless of what they might claim, I don't think they truly care about Aelin Galathinius. I think they just want to find a ruler who best serves their interests. And maybe they only want her to raise an army so their businesses can thrive during the war that would ensue. If they aid her, give her badly needed supplies,
then she'd owe them. They want a puppet queen, not a true ruler.
Of course they would want something like that.
Are they even from Terrasen?
No. Davis's family was, years ago, but he spent his whole life in Rifthold. If he claims loyalty to Terrasen, it's only a half-truth.
She ground her teeth. Self-serving bastards.
Archer shrugged. That may be true, but they've also rescued a good number of would-be victims from the king's gallows, apparently. The night his friends burst into the house, it was because they'd managed to save one of their informants from being interrogated by the king. They smuggled him out of Rifthold before dawn broke the next day.
Did Kaol know about this? Given how he'd reacted to killing Cain, she didn't think torturing and hanging traitors were a part of his duties, or were even mentioned to him. Or Dorian, for that matter. But if Kaol wasn't in charge of interrogating possible traitors, then who was? Was this person the source who had given the king his latest list of traitors to the crown? Oh, there were too many things to consider, too many secrets and tangled webs. Selena asked,
Do you think you can get me into Davis's office right now? I want to look around.
Archer smirked.
My darling, why do you think I brought you over here?
He smoothly led her to a nearby side door, a servant's entrance. No one noticed as they slipped through, and if they had, Archer's hands roaming over her bodice, her arms, her shoulders, her neck, would suggest that they were going through the door for some privacy. A seductive smile on his face, Archer tugged her down the small hallway, then up the stairs, always taking care to keep his hands moving on her lest anyone see them. But all the servants were preoccupied, and the upstairs hall was clear and quiet, its wood-paneled walls and red carpeting immaculate. The paintings here, several from artists she recognized, were worth a small fortune. Archer moved with a stealth that probably came from years of slipping in and out of bedrooms. He led her to a set of locked double doors. Before she could pull one of Philippa's pins from her hair to unlock it, a pick appeared in Archer's hand. He gave her a conspirator's grin. A heartbeat after that, the office door swung open, revealing a room lined with bookshelves over an ornate blue carpet,
with potted ferns scattered throughout. A large desk sat in the center, two armchairs before it, and a chaise sprawled near a darkened fireplace. Selena paused in the doorway, pressing on her bodice just to feel the slender dagger tucked inside. She brushed her legs together, checking the two daggers strapped to her thighs.
"I should go downstairs," Archer said, glancing at the hallway behind them.
The sounds of a waltz floated up from the ballroom.
"Try to be quick."
She raised an eyebrow, even though the mask covered her features. "Are you telling me how to do my job?" He leaned in, brushing his lips against her neck.
"I wouldn't dream of it,"
he said onto her skin. Then he turned and was gone. Selena quickly shut the door, then strode to the windows at the other side of the room and closed the curtains. The dim light shining beneath the door was enough to see by as she moved to the ironwood desk and lit a candle. The evening papers, a stack of response cards from tonight's mask, a personal expenses ledger. Normal. Completely normal. She searched the rest of the desk, rifling through the drawers and knocking on every surface to check for trick compartments. When that yielded nothing, she walked to one of the bookcases, tapping the books to see whether any were hollowed out. She was about to turn away when a title caught her eye. A book with a single word mark written on the spine in blood-red ink. She pulled it out and rushed to the desk, setting down the candle as she opened the book. It was full of word marks, every page covered with them, and with words in a language she didn't recognize. Nehemia had said it was secret knowledge, that the word marks were so old they'd been forgotten for centuries. Titles like this had been burned with the rest of the books on magic. She had found one in the palace library, The Walking Dead, but that had been a fluke. The art of using the word marks was lost. Only Nehemia's family knew how to properly use their power. But here, in her hands, she flipped through the book. Someone had written a sentence on the inside of the back cover, and Selena brought the candle closer as she peered at what had been scribbled. It was a riddle, or some strange turn of phrase. "It is only with the eye that one can see rightly." But what in hell did it mean? And what was Davis, some half-corrupt businessman, doing with a book on word marks, of all things? If he was trying to interfere with the king's plans. For the sake of Aurelia, she prayed the king had never even heard of word marks. She memorized the riddle. She would write it down when she returned to the castle. Maybe ask Nehemia if she knew what it meant, or if she'd heard of Davis. Archer might have given her vital information, but he obviously didn't know everything. Fortunes had been broken upon the loss of magic. People who had made their living for years by harnessing its power were suddenly left with nothing. It seemed natural for them to seek out another source of power, even though the king had outlawed it. But what? Footsteps sounded down the hall. Selena swiftly put the book back on the shelf, then looked to the window. Her dress was too big, and the window too small and high for her to easily make it out that way. And with no other exit, the lock in the double doors clicked. Selena leaned against the desk, whipping out her handkerchief, bowing her shoulders, and starting a miserable sniffle sob as Davis entered his study. The short, solid man paused at the sight of her, the smile that had been on his face fading. Thankfully, he was alone. She popped up, doing her best to look embarrassed. "Oh," she said, dabbing at her eyes with her kerchief through the holes in her mask. "Oh, I'm sorry. I needed a place to be alone for a moment, and they said I could come in here." Davis's eyes narrowed, then shifted to the key in the lock.
"How did you get in?"
A smooth, slippery voice, dripping with calculation and a hint of fear. She let out a shuddering sniffle. "The housekeeper?" Hopefully the poor woman wouldn't be flayed alive for this. Selena hitched her voice, stumbling and rushing through the words. My betrothed left me. Honestly, she sometimes wondered if there was something a bit wrong with her for being able to cry so easily. Davis took her in again, his lip curling. Not out of sympathy, she realized, but from disgust at this silly, weeping woman sniffling about her fiancé. As if it would be a colossal waste of his precious time to comfort a person in pain.
The thought of Archer having to serve these people, who looked at him like he was a toy to be used until he was broken. She focused on her breathing. She just had to get out of here without raising Davis's suspicions. One word to the guards down the hall, and she'd be in more trouble than she wanted, and might possibly drag Archer down with her. She let out another shudder sniffle.
"There is a lady's powder room on the first floor," Davis said, stepping toward her to escort her out.
Perfect. As he approached, he pulled off the bird mask he wore, revealing a face that had probably been handsome in its youth. Age and too much drinking had pummeled it into saggy cheeks, thinning straw-blonde hair and a dull complexion. Capillaries had burst on the tip of his nose, staining it a purplish red that offset his watery gray eyes. He stopped close enough to touch her and held out a hand. She dabbed at her eyes one more time, then slipped her handkerchief back into her dress pocket.
"Thank you," she whispered, looking at the floor as she took his hand. I am sorry for intruding."
She heard his sudden intake of breath before she caught the flash of metal. She had him disabled and on the floor in a heartbeat, but not fast enough to avoid the sting of Davis's dagger slicing into her forearm. The yards of fabric that made up her dress were cumbersome as she pinned him to the carpet, a thin line of blood welling up and trickling down her bare arm.
"No one has the keys to this study," Davis hissed,
despite his prone position.
"Brave or foolish, not even my housekeeper."
Selena shifted her hand, going for the points in his neck that would render him unconscious. If she could hide her forearm, then she could still slip out of here unnoticed.
"What were you looking for?"
Davis demanded, his breath reeking of wine as he wriggled against her hold. She didn't bother to answer, and he surged up, trying to dislodge her. She slammed her weight into him, lifting her hand to deliver the blow.
Then he chuckled softly. "Don't you want to know what was on that blade?"
She could have ripped his face off with her fingernails for the silken smile he gave her. In a smooth, swift movement, she snatched up his dagger and sniffed. She'd never forget that musky smell, not in 1,000 lifetimes. Gloriella, a mild poison that caused hours of paralysis. It had been used the night she was captured to knock her down, to make her helpless to fight back as she was handed over to the king's men and thrown into the royal dungeons. Davis's smile turned triumphant.
"Just enough to knock you out until my guards arrive and bring you to a more private location." Where she'd be tortured, he didn't need to add.
Bastard. How much had she been exposed to? The cut was shallow and short, but she knew the Gloriella was already racing through her, just as it had on the days after she'd lain beside Sam's broken corpse, smelling the musky smoke still clinging to him. She had to go, now. She shifted her free hand to knock him out, but her fingers felt brittle, disconnected, and despite being short, he was strong. Someone must have trained him, because in a too-fast movement he grabbed her wrists, twisting her to the ground. She slammed into the carpet so hard the air was knocked from her lungs, her head spun, and she lost her grip on the dagger. The Gloriella was acting fast, too fast. She had to get out. A bolt of panic went through her, pure and undiluted. Her confounded dress got in the way, but she focused what little control remained on bringing up her legs and kicking. So hard he let her go for a moment.
"Bitch!"
He lunged for her again, but she'd already grabbed his poisoned dagger. A heartbeat later, he was clutching his neck as his blood sprayed on her dress, on her hands. He collapsed to the side, grasping at his throat as though he could hold it together, keeping his life's blood from spewing. He was making a familiar gurgling noise, but Selena didn't give him the mercy of ending it as she staggered to her feet. No. She didn't even give him a parting glance as she took the dagger and ripped the skirts of her gown up to her knees. A moment after that, she was at his office window, studying the guards and parked carriages below, each thought fuzzier than the last as she climbed onto the ledge. She didn't know how she made it or how long it took, but suddenly she was on the ground and sprinting toward the open front gate. The guards or footmen or servants started shouting, She was running, running as fast as she could, losing control of her body with each heartbeat that pumped the Gloriella through her. They were in the wealthy part of the city, near the Royal Theater, and she scanned the skyline, searching, searching for the glass castle. There! The glowing towers had never seemed more beautiful, more welcoming. She had to get back. Her vision blurring, Selena gritted her teeth and ran. She had enough awareness to snatch a cloak off a drunk dozing on a corner and wipe the blood from her face, even though it took several tries to keep her hands steady as she ran. Once the cloak concealed her ruined dress, she made for the main gates of the castle grounds, where the guards recognized her, though the lights were too dim for them to look closely. The wound had been short and shallow. She could make it. She just had to get inside, get to safety. But she stumbled on the winding road leading up to the castle, and her run turned into a staggering walk before she even got to the castle itself. She couldn't go in the front like this, not unless she wanted everyone to see, not unless she wanted everyone to know who was responsible for Davis's death. She swayed with every step as she made for a side entrance, where studded iron doors were left partially open to the night. The barracks. Not the best place to enter, but good enough. Maybe the guards would be discreet.
One foot in front of the other, just a little farther.
She didn't remember getting to the barracks doors, only the bite of the metal studs as she pushed them open. The light of the hall burned her eyes, but at least she was inside. The door to the mess hall was open, and the sounds of laughter and clinking mugs floated toward her. Was she numb from the cold, or was it the Gloriella taking over? She had to tell someone what antidote to give her. Just tell someone. One hand braced against the wall, the other holding her cloak tightly around her. She slipped past the mess hall, every breath lasting a lifetime. No one stopped her. No one even looked her way. There was one door down this hall that she had to reach, one room where she'd be safe. She kept her hand on the stone wall, counting the doors as she passed. So close. Her cloak caught on the handle of a door as she passed by and ripped away. But she made it to that door, to the room where she'd be safe. Her fingers didn't quite feel the grain of the wood as she pushed against the door and swayed on the threshold. Bright light, a blur of wood and stone, and paper, and through the haze, a face she knew, gaping at her from behind a desk. A choked noise came out of her throat, and she looked down at herself long enough to see the blood covering her white dress, her arms, her hands. In the blood she could see Davis, and the open gash across his throat.
"Kale,"
she moaned, seeking that familiar face again. But he was already running, smashing through his office. He bellowed her name as her knees buckled and she fell. She saw only the golden brown of his eyes and held on long enough to whisper,
"Gloriella,"
before everything tilted and went black. Chapter 13. It was one of the longest nights of Kaol's life. Every second had passed by with horrific clarity. Every agonizing second, as Selena lay there on the floor of his office, her bodice covered in so much blood that he couldn't tell where she was bleeding. And with all the stupid layers of frills and pleats, he couldn't see the entry wounds. So he'd lost it, utterly lost it. There was no thought in his head beyond a roaring panic as he shut the door, took out his hunting knife, and ripped open her dress right there. But there were no wounds, only a sheathed stiletto that clattered to the floor and a scratch on her forearm. With the dress ripped away, there was hardly any blood on her. And that's when the panic cleared enough for him to remember what she'd whispered. Gloriella. A poison used to temporarily paralyze victims. Everything from then on became a series of steps. Quietly summoning Ress, telling the young, talented guard to keep his mouth shut and to find whatever healers were closest, wrapping her in his cloak so no one could see the blood on her skin, scooping her up and carrying her to her rooms, barking orders at the healers, and finally pinning her down on the bed as they forced the antidote down her throat until she choked on it. Then the long, long hours spent holding her as she vomited, twisting her hair back, snarling at anyone who entered the room. When she was sleeping soundly at last, he sat by her, still watching over her as he sent Ress and his most trustworthy men into the city and warned them not to come back without answers. When they did return and told him about the businessman apparently murdered by his own poisoned dagger, Kaol pieced together enough of what had happened to be sure of one thing. He was glad Davis was dead, because if Davis had survived, Kaol would have gone back to finish the job himself. Selena awoke. Her mouth was bone dry, and her head pounded. But she could move. She could wiggle her toes and her fingers, and she recognized the smell of the sheets well enough to know that she was in her bed, in her room, and that she was safe. Her eyelids were heavy as she opened them, blinking away the blurriness that still lingered. Her stomach ached, but the Gloriella had worn off. She looked to her left, as if she'd somehow known, even in sleep, where he was. Kaol dozed in the chair, his arms and legs sprawled out, his head tipped back, exposing the unbuttoned collar of his tunic and the strong column of his throat. From the angle of the sunlight, it was probably around dawn. "Kaol?" she rasped. He was instantly awake and alert, leaning toward her as if he, too, always knew where she was. When he saw her, the hand that had lurched toward his sword relaxed. "You're awake," he said, his voice a dark rumble laced with temper. "How are you feeling?" She looked at herself. Someone had washed away the blood and put her in a nightgown. Just moving her head made everything spin.
"Horrible," she admitted.
He put his head in his hands, bracing his elbows on his knees.
"Before you say anything else, just tell me this. Did you kill Davis because you were snooping in his office? He caught you and then cut you with a drugged blade?"
A flash of teeth, a flicker of rage in those golden brown eyes. Her insides twisted up at the memory, but she nodded.
"Very well," he said, standing up.
"Are you going to tell the king?"
He crossed his arms, coming to the edge of the bed and staring down at her.
"No."
Again, that volatile temper burned in his eyes. "Because I don't feel like having to argue that you're still capable of spying without getting caught. My men will keep their mouths shut, too. But the next time you do anything like this, I am going to throw you in the dungeons."
"For killing him?"
"For scaring the hell out of me."
He ran his hands through his hair, pacing for a moment, then whirled, pointing at her.
"Do you know what you looked like when you showed up?"
"I'll hazard a guess and say bad."
A flat stare.
"If I hadn't burned your dress, I'd make you look at it right now."
"You burned my dress?"
He splayed his arms. "You want proof of what you did lying around?
You could get in trouble for covering for me like this."
"I'll deal with it if it comes to that."
"Oh, you'll deal with it?"
He leaned over the bed, bracing his hands on the mattress as he snarled in her face.
"Yes, I'll deal with it."
She gulped, but her mouth was so dry she had nothing to swallow. Beyond his anger, there was enough lingering fear in his eyes that she winced.
"It was that bad?"
He slumped onto the edge of the mattress.
"You were sick, really sick. We didn't know how much Gloriella was in the wound, so the healers erred on the safe side and gave you a strong dose of the antidote, which caused you to spend a few hours with your head in a bucket."
"I don't remember any of that. I barely remember getting back to the castle."
He shook his head and stared at the wall. Dark smudges lay under his eyes, stubble coated his jaw, and utter exhaustion lined every inch of his body. He probably hadn't fallen asleep until a little while ago. She'd hardly known where she was going while the Gloriella tore through her. All she'd known was that she had to get someplace safe. And somehow, she had wound up exactly where she knew she'd be safest.
Chapter 14.
Selena absolutely hated that it took a fair amount of courage to enter the Royal Library after coming upon that thing a few nights ago. And more than that, she hated that the encounter had turned her favorite place in the castle into something unknown and possibly deadly. She felt a little foolish as she shoved open the towering oak doors to the library, armed to the teeth, most of her weapons concealed from sight. No need to have someone start asking why the king's champion was going into the library looking like she was walking onto a killing field. Not feeling at all inclined to go into Rifthold after last night, she'd opted to spend the day digesting what she'd learned in Davis's office and searching for any connection between that book of word marks and the king's plans. And since she'd only seen one hint of something being amiss in the castle, well, she'd steeled her nerve to try to learn what that thing had been looking for in the library, or if there was any hint of where it had gone. The library looked as it had always had, dim, cavernous, achingly beautiful in its ancient stone architecture, and endless corridors lined with books, and totally silent. She knew there were a few scholars and librarians about, but they mostly kept to their private studies. The size of the place was overwhelming. It was a castle in itself. What had that thing been doing here? She craned her head back to take in the two upper levels, both bordered with ornate railings. Iron chandeliers cast light and shadow throughout the main chamber in which she stood. She loved this room, loved the scattering of heavy tables and red velvet chairs, and the worn couches sprawled before massive hearths. Selena paused beside the table she had always used when researching the word marks, a table at which she'd spent hours with Kaol. Three levels that she could see. Plenty of places to hide on all of them. Rooms and alcoves and half-crumbling staircases. What about beneath this level? The library was probably too far away to connect the tunnels attached to her rooms, but there could be more forgotten places beneath the castle. The polished marble floor gleamed under her feet. Kaol had said something once about a legend regarding a second library underground, in catacombs and tunnels. If she were doing something that she didn't want others to find out about, if she were some foul creature who needed a place to hide. Maybe she was a fool for looking into it, but she had to know. Maybe this thing would be able to give her some clues as to what was going on in this castle. She headed for the nearest wall, and was soon swallowed up in the gloom of the stacks. It took her a few minutes to reach the perimeter wall, which was interspersed with bookcases and chipped writing desks. She pulled a piece of chalk from her pocket and drew an X on one of the desks. Most of the library would probably look the same after a while. It would be helpful to know when she'd made a full sweep of the perimeter, even if it took her hours to cover it all. She passed stack after stack of books, some of the cases plain, some of them ornately carved. Sconces were few and far enough apart that she often had to take several steps in near darkness. The floor had turned from gleaming marble to ancient gray blocks, and the scrape of her boots against stone was the only sound. It felt as if it had been the only sound for 1,000 years. But someone must have come down this passageway to light the sconces. So if she became lost, she might not stay that way forever. Not that getting lost was a possibility, she reassured herself, as the silence of the library became a living thing. She'd been trained to mark and remember pathways and exits and turns. She'd be fine. Odds were that she'd had to go back as far into the library as possible, to a place where even the scholars didn't bother going. There had been a day, she recalled, a day when she'd been poring over The Walking Dead, and she'd felt something under her boots. Kaol had later revealed that he'd been dragging his dagger along the floor to spook her, but the initial vibration had been different, like someone drawing a claw along stone. Stop it, she told herself. Stop it now. Your imagination is absurd. It was just Kaol teasing you. She didn't know how long she'd been walking when she finally hit another wall, a corner. The bookcases here were all carved from ancient wood, their ends shaped into sentries, guards forever protecting the books held between them. It was here that the sconces ran out, and a glance down the back wall of the library revealed utter darkness. Thankfully, one of the scholars had left a torch beside the last sconce. It was small enough that it wouldn't burn the whole damn library down, but also too small to last long. She could end it now, and go back to her rooms to contemplate